This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley.
All right, Clanton. You called down the thunder. Well, now you got it. You see that? It says United States Marshal.
Wyatt, please don't kill me, please. Please.
Take a good look at him, Ike, because that's how you're going to end up. The Cowboys are finished, you understand me? I see a red sash. I killed a man wearing it. So run, you cur.
Run! Tell all the other curs the lie's coming. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
That's Kurt Russell as Wyatt Earp from the 1993 film Tombstone. The film depicts one of the most famous chapters of the Wyatt Earp legend, the gunfight at the OK Corral. Author Alan Bera examines both the real and imagined life of the lawman in his new book, Inventing Wyatt Earp, His Life and Many Legends. He recently spoke with Terry Gross.
Alan Bera, welcome to Fresh Air. Now, before we talk about how the legend of Wyatt Earp was created, let's start with the legend. Just give us an abbreviated version of the legend of Wyatt Earp.
Oh, all right. Let's see. The legend of Wyatt Earp is that Wyatt Earp was the best-known town marshal or county sheriff of Dodge City or Tombstone and numerous other western towns. In fact, he was none of those things. He was never a county sheriff of anywhere or town marshal of Dodge City, Tombstone, or anywhere else. He was one of the first modern cops, an excellent enforcer, somebody who was very, very adept at keeping the peace without having to draw his gun and fire, without having to kill people, which makes it, I think, doubly ironic that he's best known, immortal, one might say, for 30 seconds of violence at the OK Corral, where he was forced into the only gunfight of his entire life.
Yeah, the gunfight at the OK Corral, one of the most famous gunfights in history or legend. What was the fight about?
Essentially, Wyatt and his brothers had gone to Tombstone to try and get out of the law business. Wyatt was particularly disgusted because he had been forced to shoot a drunken cowhand in Dodge City and was eventually, the man eventually died. That was one of the things that soured Wyatt on the law. He had never had to do that before. They went down to Tombstone, which was this fabulous boomtown camp. People coming from all over the world. There was French, Chinese, New Yorkers even, all the way down in this little corner of Arizona. The Earps, however, found that the thing they did best was law enforcement. They dealt faro in saloons. They bought interests in different saloons. That was very respectable, very common back then. Gambling was considered an honest business. But they also worked for Wells Fargo. So they had an interest in preserving the flow of silver shipments coming in and out of the Tombstone area. Also, Virgil, or Wyatt's older brother, was a deputy U.S. Marshal who often used his brothers, Wyatt and Morgan, in tight situations. Their opposition was numerous former Texans, most of them, some ex-Confederates, who had drifted into the Arizona Territory because there's a lot of money to be made and very little law in the area. And mostly they preyed on the Mexican cattle industry and the big haciendas across the border in Sonora. The Mexicans began tightening up their border patrols. The cowboys sort of fell back on when I use cowboy, by the way, the term was kind of disreputable at the time. Real cowboys, what we would call cowboys today, were then called mostly cowhands, drovers, terms like that. Cowboys sort of they always put quotes around it when they used it in the paper. It meant rustler or cattle thief. So gradually the cowboy gang or association, as it was, fell back on Wells Fargo shipments and brought the Earps more and more into play.
So so the gunfight at the OK Corral, that was the Earp brothers with Doc Holliday against who?
Against two local ranchers in the area, Ike Clanton and his brother Billy and the McClowry brothers, who may or may not have been part of the cowboy gang per se, but certainly their ranches were sort of the places where the stolen Mexican cattle were kept or fenced before they were sold to the army or to the local ranchers in the area. So the cowboys kind of had the aspect of, let's say, Robin Hood. They defied the federal government, which was just fine with most of the locals in the area who were small farmers, small ranchers, democratic in their politics, and who hated the northern Republican Earps. And things built up and built up, and finally, on the afternoon of October 26, 1881, early in the afternoon, the cowboys were making numerous threats to the lives of the Earps in Tombstone. And several people came up to warn Virgil Earp, the town marshal, and finally, around 2:20 in the afternoon, the Earps were fed up and went down to the vacant lot in back of the OK Corral, next to Fly's photography studio, which is where the fight actually took place. But, of course, as a friend of mine said, you'd never get that all in a movie marquee.
So who was killed in the fight?
They walk into the lot. Virgil Earp is holding Doc Holliday's cane. He thinks they're there to make an arrest. Sheriff Behan, the local Democratic sheriff and a rival to both Virgil and Wyatt, has been protecting the cowboys because they use the cowboys for various election fraud things. And, you know, they look the other way at their cattle stealing activities. They don't care about that. So Behan says, well, I've disarmed them. And Virgil relaxes his grip on his gun. Wyatt keeps his hand on his gun, which is in his pocket. They walk into the lot, and lo and behold, at least two of the cowboys have guns, sidearms, and in defiance of town law, by the way. The Earps were strict gun control advocates. A third cowboy, one of the McClowry brothers, has his hand on the Winchester rifle on the saddle of his horse. And we're not sure if anyone else had a gun there. But Virgil holds up the cane and says, I've come to disarm you. Throw up your hands. They hear a click, click of guns. No one knows who fired first. Cowboy witnesses say it was the Earps who just walked in and murdered the cowboys. Virgil and Wyatt said no. The cowboys went for their guns first. Neutral witnesses, if you look at the transcript of the fight, support the Earp testimony, invariably support the Earp testimony. That, in fact, at least one of the cowboys went for his gun first. In any event, the fight became general. Within 27 seconds, by one estimate, everybody in the fight, except Ike Clanton, who ran, was wounded or dead, except Wyatt Earp. He was the only one not touched by a bullet. It's a pretty good way to start a legend, by the way.
Let's take a look at how the gunfight at the OK Corral was portrayed in the movie Gunfight at the OK Corral, which starred Burt Lancaster as Wyatt Earp and Kirk Douglas as Doc Holliday. In this scene, the Earps and Doc Holliday are walking to the OK Corral to confront the cowboys, the bad guys, the Clantons. And the scene opens with the sheriff asking them to leave their guns behind. When they refuse, the sheriff goes to the Clantons to warn them that the Earps are coming. So here's that scene, starting with the sheriff speaking.
Ike wants to talk to you alone. He's unarmed.
Wait a minute, Wyatt. Kate told me about the killing of your brother. It was the Clantons, all right. And you were in on it.
I had nothing to do with it.
Get back where you belong.
Believe me, Wyatt, if...
Get back with your friends.
They're coming. They got Doc Holliday with them.
Holliday, huh? Cotton, you get over with the horses.
I can't take this kind of gunplay anymore. Let me out.
Get over there.
It's a scene from Gunfight at the OK Corral. Alan Barra is the author of the new book, Inventing Wyatt Earp, His Life and Many Legends. Alan Barra, how did this scene shape the legend? Was this an important movie in creating the legend of the gunfight?
Definitely. It was the first movie where they actually used the phrase gunfight at the OK Corral. It was generally called the street fight in Tombstone before that. Although I think Walter Brennan in My Darling Clementine did say, we'll see you tomorrow, Marshall, down at the OK Corral. I think that they used the phrase there. In the first movie, Earp movie, 1932, Law and Order, Walter Houston confronted the bad guys at the OK Barn. I don't know how they got that wrong. Gunfight at the OK Corral put the term right into American lexicon. And actually, there's a couple things about that scene that are correct.
But was the sheriff in on it, like this scene implies?
Well, you simplify things for Hollywood. It's almost certain that John Behan was associated with the cowboys. But he had no reason to want a gunfight to occur that day, and probably did try and stop it. He did go to the Earps and say, I've been down there to disarm them. He didn't say he'd actually disarmed them because apparently he tried and couldn't. Then apparently he did go back and say something to the cowboys who still would not give up their guns. So the Bean was crooked, yes. He was not openly associated with the group, which, by the way, was not led by Ike Clanton, who once the fight actually started, screamed for mercy. He ran up to Wyatt and said, Wyatt, I've got no gun. And Earp looked down at him and said, he was on his knees in front of him, and he said, Ike, this fight has commenced. Get to fighting or get away. And Ike got, he ran right across Tombstone, across half the town.
Terry Gross speaking with Alan Barra. He's the author of Inventing Wyatt Earp, His Life and Many Legends. We'll continue after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with Alan Barra. He's written a new book on the legend of Wyatt Earp.
Let's hear a scene from another movie, a more recent movie about Wyatt Earp, and this is from the movie Tombstone, which starred Kurt Russell as Wyatt Earp and Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday, Sam Elliott as Virgil Earp. And in this scene, the mayor is telling them that the bad guys, the cowboys, are waiting for them at the OK Corral. Virgil wants to confront them and disarm them, but Wyatt doesn't want to get into a fight. In the meantime, we'll hear Doc Holliday coming by, and Doc Holliday wants to join in the fight with the Earps. So here's the scene from Tombstone.
Those cowboys have been telling everybody in town they're going to clean you out. They're back there in that lot behind the OK Corral.
Thank you, Mayor.
What are you doing out of bed, Doc?
What in the hell's going on? Had five people come up to my room telling me that Clanton's and McLowry's are gunning for us.
We're going down there, Doc. What are we going to do?
Wait till the liquor wears off. As soon as they start getting headaches, they'll lose interest.
Lose interest? Hell, they're threatening our lives.
Well, you'll never make that stick.
They're carrying guns, Wyatt.
Say, Virg, that's a misdemeanor. You go down there to arrest them. Something goes wrong. Maybe this time somebody really gets his head broke. You'll have cowboys coming around looking for trouble from here to Christmas. You want to risk all that over a misdemeanor?
You're damn right I'll risk it. They're breaking the law.
It's not your problem, Doc. You don't have to mix up in this.
That is a hell of a thing for you to say to me.
Virg, your call. Give Doc the shotgun. They'll be less apt to get nervy if he's on the street howitzer.
A scene from Tombstone, and by the way, we heard Bill Paxton as Morgan Earp. Well, does this scene sound accurate to you, Alan Barra?
It's much closer. It's the closest thing to reality, except that on the day of the fight, Wyatt Earp was pretty wound up. He had been reluctant to actually get into any kind of gunfight prior to that. Probably at the time of the fight, he was a little more anxious to get it on than Kurt Russell portrayed in that scene. Nonetheless, Sam Elliott, as Virgil, was absolutely right. Virgil was in charge. He did everything he could to avoid a confrontation, but he was not going to let the cowboys walk around town carrying guns and threatening their lives in full view of the populace. The Doc Holliday scene apparently actually happened. There's no way I think they could have kept Doc Holliday out of the fight. Virgil Earp did deputize him, or so he said. But probably the idea of giving Doc Holliday the shotgun was to cover their flank. Also, Doc had a long a coat on, and he could hide it under their coat, which wouldn't antagonize the cowboys. So Virgil took Doc's cane and walked into the lot with the cane in his hand, thinking that would end the fight. It didn't. But anyway, that's a fairly accurate rendition. And one other thing they had right in the movie is the Earps made that famous OK Corral walk. How many times has that been done in movies? 20 times, maybe. 24 times. Many, many people actually saw them and watched them along the way. Tombstone was a big town. Thousands of people there. And by this time, a lot of people knew it was going to happen.
Now, how did the story first get spread about the gunfight at the OK Corral? How was it reported in the press? Was there newspaper coverage?
The immediate coverage was highly favorable to the Earps, even by the papers that were not favorable to them. The local pro-Earp paper, which was also run by Mr. Clum, the mayor in that scene, by the way, I think it was played by Terry O'Quinn, was favorable to the Earps, but so was the local Democratic paper, The Nugget. However, quickly after that, Democratic papers all over the territory began portraying the Earps in a bad light. Here was a chance for them to make a real political statement. The sheriff, Ike Clanton, and the others immediately saw to it that the Earps were brought in for inquest in preparation for trial on an accusation of murder. They were thoroughly exonerated in that. But here's an important change that Hollywood made in the story, up to Tombstone, rather. I'm talking about the early Earp movies, Law and Order, My Darling Clementine, Gunfight at the O.K. Corral. In the early movies, one of Wyatt's brothers is shot, and in revenge, retaliation for it, the gunfight comes about. In actual life, it happened the other way around. They had the gunfight in back of the O.K. Corral, and retaliation for that, Wyatt's brothers were ambushed. Morgan was murdered. Virgil was crippled. Then came the truly controversial part of Wyatt Earp's life. Along with Doc Holliday and a couple of friends and deputies, he got warrants for the cowboys that were presumed to be the killers, went out and looked for them, and shot them all. Nobody came back alive. That is the truly controversial part of Earp's life, and that's the part they leave out of the movies. Well, among others, that's one part that's left out.
And what's controversial about that, that he took the law into his own hands?
Yeah, essentially, yes, although we're not absolutely certain that's what happened. That's because there was no witnesses to a couple of those killings. But in Earp's favor, you would say, well, those were the people that were believed to be responsible. He did have warrants. Perhaps they resisted arrest. We don't know for certain. We do know that he shot a former deputy of John Behan's at the train station in Tucson. What the deputy was doing there, Frank Stillwell, we don't know. I assume he was there to try and murder one of the Earp brothers. But no one can say for certain. All they know is they found his body the next day, and there's a murder warrant, I believe, still out there for Wyatt Earp to this day.
If you could choose any one thing that actually spread the legend of the O.K. Corral, what would it be? The newspaper reports or word of mouth? What was it?
Oddly enough, what really made Earp controversial was the Vendetta ride, which came after the O.K. Corral. But that legend was spread by a man named Stuart Lake, who was a former press secretary for Teddy Roosevelt, a friend of Bat Masterson's, who, of course, was Wyatt's great friend in Dodge City, and eventually Wyatt's biographer, although the biography he worked on with him was one that Wyatt scarcely contributed anything to since Wyatt died 6 months after they began. The book was published in 1931. It's called Wyatt Earp, Frontier Marshal. It portrayed Wyatt in, let's say, too good a light. It left out a lot of inconsistencies in the man and a lot of almost all the controversy. But Lake went to Hollywood and sold the story in a number of different ways and was happy to turn the story around to make it even more antiseptic for the movies. And that, of course, evolved into the television show in the 50s and the more popular movies and led the image of Wyatt Earp as Shining Knight.
Well, we'll hold it right there. Let's get to the TV show from the 50s, Wyatt Earp, in which Hugh O'Brien played Wyatt Earp. And this is a lawman show. In fact, mm-hmm. Let's hear the theme from Wyatt Earp.
Ooh. Wyatt Earp, Wyatt Earp, brave, courageous, and bold. And long may his story be told. Ooh. Ooh. Well, he cleaned up the country, the old Wild West country. He made law and order prevail. And none can deny it, the legend of Wyatt forever will live on the trail.
Oh, Wyatt Earp, Wyatt Earp.
That's the theme from the TV show Wyatt Earp, and my guest Alan Barra is the author of the book Inventing Wyatt Earp. So, Alan Barra, did Wyatt Earp, as the theme lyrics say, clean up the country and make law and order prevail?
Well, he did his darndest. The answer is no. He did a great deal of good work in Wichita and Dodge City. When he left Tombstone, he had a murder warrant out for him for having killed the man accused of killing his brother. And Tombstone was a mess, but you can't really blame Earp for that. I can't. I think after looking at the record closely, he did his very best. And the song was right. He was brave, courageous, and bold. And what I'm finding is that on the whole, there's something. There's a hard nugget of truth in almost every wild story or legend told about Wyatt Earp.
Alan Barra speaking with Terry Gross. Barra has a new book on the legend of Wyatt Earp. The interview continues after 1 minute. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with Alan Barra, the author of Inventing Wyatt Earp, His Life and Many Legends.
Wyatt Earp's legend has long outlived Wyatt Earp. Did he have a role in creating the legend? I know that he did some work in Hollywood before dying in, what, 1926?
1929, actually.
1929. Did he consult on any Western films?
That's an interesting story, and to me is the truly fascinating part of the story. If you're interested in how the folk process evolves, as I say in my book, we can't really know now how Robin Hood or whoever it was that they call Robin Hood became Robin Hood, but in Wyatt Earp you can see something of the myth making process at work, because he starts out in conditions out on the buffalo hunting plains that are so primitive. There's no newspapers, nothing but oral tradition to carry his story along. Very little newspaper account of him in the cow towns, because the town fathers don't want these kind of clashes publicized. Most of the accounts we have are oral, people that saw him in action. Then Earp lives long enough to go to Hollywood, make friends out there, and influence his own image on the screen. He became friends with Harry Carey Sr., Tom Mix, William S. Hart, all of whom helped to get him bit parts in movies. He was in William S. Hart's Wild Bill Hickok movie, we think, as a stand-in. William S. Hart tried to help Wyatt sell his autobiography to the movies, his early attempt at an autobiography. And he also knew a young aspiring filmmaker by the name of John Ford. And we all know, of course, that Ford later directed two movies with Wyatt Earp as a character. One, My Darling Clementine, which we call a pro-Earp movie, and later on, Cheyenne Autumn with James Stewart. Henry Fonda played him in My Darling Clementine, and James Stewart in Cheyenne Autumn, which is largely a negative portrayal of Wyatt and reflected his image, how his image had gone downhill in the 1960s. So, yes, you'd have to say Wyatt, the reason we remember him today, one of the reasons, is that he was the only Old West legend to live long enough to influence his own portrayal on the movie screen.
Do you know if it was important to him to be a legend?
No. Actually, I was surprised at this, because I had sort of grown up with, let's say, the anti-Earp story over the years, and was used to reading in the Time Life series in the Old West and anthologies, you know, coffee table books, that Earp was a self-promoter who glorified himself. All one has to do is read his book, Wyatt Earp, Frontier Marshal, to see that. But it turned out that, in fact, Wyatt didn't write Wyatt Earp, Frontier Marshal. Stewart S. Lake wrote it and put most of it in Wyatt's mouth after he died. Almost the whole book is first person, and Earp dictated nothing to Stewart Lake. Essentially, that book is a very entertaining novel with some hard nuggets, some very good historical research in it. But as far as the self-glorifying part, Earp had nothing to do with that at all. Second, as far as the movies go, Wyatt really wanted nothing more than to live a quiet life, less late in life. Early in his life after Tombstone, he was an adventurer. He ran all over the West with his very beautiful wife, Josephine Sarah Marcus. She was a Jewish girl from New York. Her family moved to San Francisco. She went to Tombstone as an actress with a Gilbert and Sullivan troupe. She was the mistress of Wyatt's political rival, John Behan, in Tombstone. And afterwards, she meets Wyatt again in San Francisco, and they're together for 47 years. And they're all over the West. But Wyatt never lived down the gunfight in Tombstone and the subsequent vendetta ride. And he tried hard Wyatt was not a self-publicist. What he reacted to in his later years were numerous magazine and newspaper stories and eventually books that were written by journalists and people in Tombstone that were unfavorable to him. He probably would have died in obscurity and happily died in obscurity if it hadn't been for his enemies who kept his legend alive.
Well, Alan Bauer, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about Wyatt Earp.
It's been wonderful to be here.
Alan Barra is the author of Inventing Wyatt Earp, His Life and Many Legends. He spoke with Terry Gross.